Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodies, and welcome back to another episode of Foodie Films. Of course, this is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried. What's going on? What's happening? How are you? Oh yeah, foodies. You know, we had 5 weeks of that New Orleans takeover, but Foodie Films is back to being released once a week. I've been doing pretty good, and I've got a lot of people that I want to talk with. So we got another first cut episode for you today, but we definitely have some movie ones for you in the future. So I'm looking forward to talking movies again with some people. Last one we did was, Casablanca. And so, but I want to, there's some great food movies out there, as you know. Ratatouille, Chef, Big Night, those are some of the more popular food movies. And so I can't wait, Got a lot of golden eggs out there that I am ready to turn into a podcast omelet, let's call it. But anyway, got a great one for you today. Like I said, another first cut. We've got Michael Chernow. This one I recorded before the trip to New Orleans, or maybe it was right after. Point being, just in the release schedule, I recorded it a while ago. So a couple of things. We talked football for quite some time, so I trimmed that at the beginning. So there's a little football talk in the beginning, but yeah, that's fun. So there's definitely, I think we're referring to maybe the playoffs, so that puts a little time stamp on it. And also at the time, I was still using some older equipment, and now I've moved on to my nice H6 Zoom with my lav mics. So if this one sounds a little different, that's because it's with the older equipment, but I think it still sounds pretty good. So just wanted to put those things out there. Also, before the episode, I just want to say today I recorded an episode with Chef Claude Lewis. I heard about him from the Midnight Market Ladies, Lisa and Perla, who we had on a long time ago. Got to have them on again. We talked a movie with them. We talked fried green tomatoes, and I just want to have them on because they've been doing some really exciting things with their business. But I heard about Chef Claude from them and finally got to sit down with him, and I ate at his restaurant, Freetown Road Project, right afterwards, or just Freetown Road. I think that's, if you're tagging it, that's what it's on it, or if you're Googling it. And so talked with him, had a meal at his place afterwards, had some oxtail, rice and cabbage, and it was absolutely delicious, this ginger drink. So I just like plugging these. Obviously you're going to hear all about it when I release that episode, but just as far as when I eat at a new place, I just like saying those because I want you guys to check them out as soon as possible and grab a dish there, say hi to them. Say you found out about this place, that'll just, make me feel good, make him feel good. Check out Freetown Road Project. It's on Newark Ave in Jersey City. So like I said, we've got Michael Chernow. I found out about him via this GQ video that we talk a little bit on the episode, and it was just him breaking down some famous food scenes. The first one was from Julie and Julia, the first episode we ever did for this podcast. So food, film, perfect. I was like, I gotta have this guy on. So I reached out to him, started looking him up, and I'm like, oh, founder of Seymour's, co-founder of the Meatball Shop. By the way, this past Monday, if you're listening to this, the day came out, Wednesday 11th, Monday the 9th was National Meatball Day, so happy National Meatball Day to everyone, and especially Michael, the co-founder of the Meatball Shop. Co-founder of Well Well, he also has a new podcast that was coming out the week we recorded this, so there's a bunch of episodes. I've listened to a few of them. I love them. The podcast is called Born or Made, just a really cool concept, you know, like nature versus nurture kind of thing. And yeah, so you guys better be checking that out right after you listen to this episode. So without further ado, here we go, me talking with Michael Chernow. For even, like, I mean, not as a fan, not even for the whole organization, for Daniel Jones, I want him, like Eli had Tom Coughlin, I want him to find his Tom Coughlin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, nothing, like, I'm a pretty emotional guy. I find myself crying at movies mm-hmm. more and more for some
me
reason.
Me too, for
but,
sure.
But, man, Tom Coughlin, when he was saying, like, his goodbye, his, you know, his press conference, and then they're cutting to Eli, and he's getting all teary-eyed, and he's like, it's not your fault, son. I'm like, my God, I just, I hope I never hear my dad say that. Like,
totally. 100%. See, it's so interesting for me, too, because I grew up in New York City, Manhattan.
Okay.
And so.
What neighborhood?
87th and between 1st and 2nd Ave.
Oh, all right. Upper East Side guy.
Yeah. And so when I, from like born to 13,
yeah,
I was a Knicks, Rangers, Giants, Yankee fan. My father was a Mets fan.
Oh.
And so I was a Met fan until about 87, 88 when my father told me that my favorite player of all time was a drug addict.
Daryl Strawberry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. I mean. Strawberry charged the mound. Dad, I said, Dad, why did he charge the mound? Dad looked at me and said, because he's a drug addict. And I was just like, even though my dad loved the Mets and Daryl Strawberry,
yeah,
you know, the whole drug era. And
they
really
won,
just,
they won in 88, right? Or 86?
They won in 86.
86, yeah.
And so I became a Yankee fan, but I was just unstoppable sports fanatic until I was about 13. And then I like found out about like pot and chicks and all the other things.
Uh-huh.
And so from like 13 to 23, I completely zoned out of sports. Then I got back into sports for a little bit, and then I launched my first business.
Yeah.
And then I totally, completely was just head down, just getting work done.
Yeah.
And then in 2015, so that was 2010, 2015, I had my first son, and I said, you know, there's very few things that I'm going to force on this child,
uh-huh.
very few. And I told my wife, like, I'm not going to force sports on him. I'm not going to force, like, I'm not going to, like, make him do or push him to do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
However.
But, like, fandom?
Fandom. there's just very few things that I feel very passionately about. And,
yeah.
And honestly, you know, I'm so stoked that Finn is a huge Giants fan.
That's
he
awesome.
Loves the Giants.
And these are tough years to be a Giants
yeah.
fan.
Yeah, they are.
But
I mean, he doesn't really get it yet, but, you know, anytime there's a football on screen, he's just like, it's the Giants, is that the Giants? I'm like, no, buddy, no.
There's better football to watch today.
Yeah.
Elsewhere. Yeah. Yeah, it was a rough season.
Rough season, man.
And,
although,
yeah.
Go Titans.
Yeah, man. I'm, you know, like, anytime anyone can take the Patriots out, although obviously two Super Bowls ago when the Eagles beat them, that was just, that was the roughest Super Bowl ever to watch, man. That was,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't want to be dark or anything like that, but I was hoping for some, like just like a meteor to just kind of
just take them both.
I always said, like, Philly, like, I mean, they had Rocky signing the Declaration of Independence and cheesesteaks, and that was. I
mean,
still
that.
To this day, their most
You're
famous athlete is fictional. So, I don't know.
Like, that's true.
Right?
That's true.
I don't know. Carson Wentz, I mean, whatever. But, I mean, so, yeah, you're really into sports. I mean, you're a fit guy. You're big athletic. I mean, you know, like, before we started recording, you asked how I found out about you, and I said that GQ video, which I definitely want to, I mean, you've definitely, there's been multiple articles, but this video where, what was it called? It was the breakdown.
The breakdown.
Like, yeah. And, but just from there and Googling you, like, you're into fitness. You're in that world. So, like,
sure.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about just, like, how that translates into, obviously, working in food. Like, did you do it out of necessity? Did you see yourself like, oh boy, I'm going to be in the food industry, I got to start, you know, like, I'm picking up food on the side, let me start working out. How'd that all transpire?
You know, it's interesting. So I was an athlete as a kid. I played a lot of sports as a kid.
Okay.
Growing up in the city in public school, there's no real organized sports, right? It's not like the suburbs where you have big fields to play on.
Sure.
So I grew up playing in the police athletic leagues, roller hockey, street hockey. You know, I was part of an after-school program. We would play, you know, baseball at Randall's Island, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I was just I and then eventually I got into ice hockey when I was probably around 9 or 10. And I was a huge ice hockey player until I was about 14. I loved ice hockey. But sports have always been an outlet for me. They've just, for whatever reason, I was drawn to sports. I was an athletic kid. I was sort of naturally athletic.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm working in restaurants. I mean, I've been working in restaurants and the nightlife since I'm a child, since I'm like literally 12, 13 years old. When working in nightlife and working in the restaurant industry, you know, you're exposed to an enormous amount of the good and the bad. You know what I mean? It's the good and the bad. And so I wouldn't change a second of it.
Yeah.
But I really partook in a lot of the bad as I was growing up in the city.
I mean, just the hours alone and obviously
hours like stay, yeah. You know, working till 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, sleeping all day. Like it just did not,
yeah.
It did not lend itself to a healthy lifestyle.
Sure.
Period. And when I was 23 years old, I had sort of come to a place in my life where, you know, a boss of mine, my last boss before I opened up my first business, you know, he took me aside and he was like, Mikey, I love you to death.
Yeah.
You're killing yourself, man. And I can't watch it. Like, you are wasted all the time. And it is just unbearable to watch. Like, mm-hmm. you just gotta stop. You gotta stop.
I mean, hell, it's known like Mondays are industry night. They have a specific night of the week
yeah.
in bars and restaurants. So it's like, this is for us. And like, you know.
Right. And mind you, that's a Monday, right?
Exactly.
So yeah. Like.
Everyone else has like, you know, they have the Sunday scaries for Mondays. For you guys, it must be like, tomorrow night's industry night.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where like, you know, it's just. You work your ass off. If you're working in a busy place, you know you get in at 4 o'clock and you get out at if it's a late night place, you get out at 5.
Yeah.
And so I was putting in these really long hours, and I was drinking the whole time, and partying, and then finally, you know, Frank, my last boss, took me aside and said, "Dude, you're young. You've got so much talent. Like." I can't watch this. I can't let you work here anymore because obviously the ability, you know, and the beauty of that restaurant was that the food was so good. The wine list was so incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The people that would come there were, you know, all the people that you wanted to come to your restaurant, but there was no real structure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We ran the employees ran the show and Frank trusted all of us. However, once he got to a point where it was like, this looks like it's not going in the right direction, he would mitigate his risk and have to fire somebody. And that was coming my way. And so I loved this place so much. This
yeah.
was my – I spent 5, 6 days a week there. It was my life. I lived upstairs. I loved it more than anything.
Oh, wow. You're in it.
I was in it.
Yeah.
And I loved everything about it. I loved the food. I just loved everything about it. And so he said, you know, you gotta figure it out. And
yeah.
so I said, please give me another shot. And he said, you got to get sober, man.
How old were you at the time?
23.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's young. That's just, you know, that's one year out of. I mean, you went to the French
Culinary Institute.
Yeah. What years was that?
So I graduated high school when I was 17, and then I took a year off, and then I went to Hunter College for about a year and a half. Decided
okay.
that I hated it. It was a waste of my time because I wasn't really interested in liberal arts or
yeah.
I was going for theater history as well. I wasn't really interested in that. And so I said,
profitable
you know,
business, theater history.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you made the right choice.
Yeah. And so I zipped out of there. I moved to LA figuring I would just get my shit together. I was 19 at the time. It was 10 times worse for me in LA just because I'm a New York City kid, never drove a car, that didn't have a driver's license.
Yeah, yeah.
Get to LA, you know, get behind the you know, the wheel of a car, don't know that, you know, drinking is not something you're supposed to do. Like, it was just a nightmare. So I did that for a year. A
lot of learning curves.
Yeah. And then came back to New York, got the job at Frank at 20. And, you know, all sorts of things happened. But anyway, once the light really turned on for me, I said, he's right. And I got to get my shit together. And so I made a deal with Frank where, you know, he said, you got to show up to the restaurant for 30 days straight. Got to be here at 8 o'clock in the morning. You're not going to bartend. You're not going to bar manage. You're not going to do anything where you're making tips. You are going to clean this restaurant with the porters. And you're going to call me at 8 a.m. from the restaurant phone. And if you're a minute late, it's over.
Wow.
And so he pretty much gave me an opportunity to change my life.
He's your Tom Coughlin.
Yeah, he was my Tom Coughlin for sure. That's it. And I did. And I said, this is my time to, like, really just sort of, you know, bring my skill set and bring my assets to another level. And so I did. And when I was, you know, going through that, I had a lot of energy because I'd you know, given up all the shit that I was doing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know where to place that energy. However, a couple of guys that I knew the kind of energy that I had, because I was kind of like a, you know, I wasn't a tough guy, but like if I was out and somebody said something to me, you know, I was always a good time. I was always a fun dude to hang out with.
Sure,
but if somebody
yeah.
said something to me that wasn't awesome or that I didn't like, I was always quick to punch somebody in the mouth.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And I wasn't like that as a kid, but towards the end of my drinking career,
yeah,
that's who I became. And so these guys knew that about me and they said, you know, we got to take you and bring you to the boxing ring. And I said, okay.
Yeah, got to channel it in a positive.
Right, in a controlled,
controlled
positive environment. And so they brought me into this Muay Thai gym, and that was it. I was introduced to Muay Thai and to, like, intense fitness, and they told me exactly what to eat, you know. They said, you got to eat chicken, breast, and broccoli. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah,
chicken breast and broccoli, and train at this gym and work at night. So you come to the gym in the morning, you spend as many hours as you possibly can here, and then you go to work.
You still doing Muay Thai?
I'm not doing Muay Thai as much.
Okay.
I did Muay Thai intensely for 12 years. Now I really am. I'm passionate about weightlifting. I love lifting weights.
Yeah.
I love the challenge of lifting weights. So I really I go to the gym every morning. Really early, because I have a family now, and so in order to be able to get the time that I want in the gym, I gotta get there at 5:30 in the morning. So I get to the gym at 5:30 a.m. I train for about an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on what I'm doing. Then I get home by 7:15, 7:30, have breakfast with the kids, take my son to school, and then I get going on my day.
So it's what, 9:30 in the morning. You're well into your day already.
Well into
9:30
my day.
In the morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
I woke up, rolled out of bed,
drove
over here from Jersey City.
Hey, man, you know, for me, you know, you said, you know, you're like deep into this fitness thing. It is, I believe, you know, I have a lot of energy. Like, even, you know, from that day when I stopped drinking, you know, I realized that, like, I am the kind of person that needs to constantly be stimulated and,
sure.
and move.
Yeah.
I cannot sit still. And so what fitness has given me, not only has it made me feel great inside and out, and I recommend it to anybody who's struggling in any way in life. Like, I feel like the key to happiness is actually fitness and nutrition. I believe that if you put great things into your body and do great things with your body, you will ultimately feel great.
Yeah, I mean, in the end of the day, hey, like, I mean, we're eating, you know, like, I mean, there's obviously so many delicious dishes out there, and there's a lot of guilty pleasure food, or there's, you know, there's just, I mean, not that it's necessarily bad for you, but food is supposed to just be energy. That is mm-hmm. purely what it's supposed to be for us.
Sure.
So, like, you could be eating, you could just have, like, a protein shake every day, but, you know, people... Then, I mean, you wouldn't be having the multiple restaurants that you had
right.
if everyone was just having protein shakes every day.
Yep.
I mean,
I believe that there's – so I like to call it the be better balance, right? It's not about you can't have a burger, because that's not – that doesn't feel good when somebody's like, you can't have a
yeah. –
you can't eat pizza. You can't have French fries on a Sunday at brunch. Like, I'm like, F that. If I am focusing on being better on a day-to-day basis, if my daily plan is just to be better, well, on a Sunday afternoon, and I'm sitting down with a couple of friends, and there's a bunch of delicious food on the table. Right now, being better for me is having some of those fries. Right now, being better for me is taking, you know, having a burger.
Yeah.
And on Monday, you better believe that I'm having egg whites and eggs and spinach in the morning. I'm having kale with, you know, avocado and a piece of fish or chicken for lunch, and I'm having some sort of protein, veggie and starch for dinner, and that's like what I'm doing. Like, yeah, that's my life. So I like to call it to be better balance. 80% of the time I'm eating right, and I'm in the gym. 20% of the time I'm watching football and eating chicken wings.
So it's like an in the moment cheat day kind of, right?
Well,
like,
I just think that, you know what, if you're feeling a certain way and you know that you have the ability to stick to a plan,
yeah,
man, at that moment, feel good if that's what you want to do, you know. It's really training the mind and having the discipline to be able to say no when you know it's for the wrong reason, right?
Like, definitely.
People eat for the wrong reason all the time, and so, you know, that's how I do it.
I mean, that's definitely. It also sounds like it's your you time. You're busy guy. Like, what's your day to day like? I mean, you're the founder of Seymour's, you're co-founder of the meatball shop, co-founder of Well. What was the first venture? Meatball shop
was the first venture. It's February 9th, 2010. So we're coming up on 10 years next month.
Congratulations.
Meatball shop. Thank you. You know, and so interestingly, like, I am not your average restaurateur. What I love to do is I love to develop concepts. So I listen to people.
Yeah.
I feel like I have an innate sort of ability to really pay attention, potentially make decisions like precursors to trends. So like make decisions on what to do for my next thing.
Sure.
Based on what I'm like digging up before it actually surfaces. And so I've been pretty good at that throughout my career. So I come up with these ideas. I develop a team. I'm a real people person. That's what I think I do best is people.
Yeah.
And so I develop a concept, put a team of people around it, have the balls to go out there and raise money and just take a leap of faith and bring these brands to life.
Yeah.
I do it for about 4 years of just hardcore every day in the restaurant, you know, 12 hours bouncing around to the restaurants. And then I try after 4 years. I mean, this is, I've done this twice now. So, you know, I'm onto my third. This is sort of what I've learned I'm going to do. It's risky and scary, but it's what I do.
Yeah.
I develop them, and then I try to sell equity so that I can do the next one.
Okay.
And so I did that with the meatball shop. We built 5-6 restaurants together. Now there's 7, but you know, on our 6th restaurant, I said to my partner, hey, dude, I'm really excited about another project. You are the man. You can run this thing. You don't need me. You never really did. We work really well together as a team. However, you're much more the sort of logistics financials guy. It is really an execution business and an operations business at this point. Take the reins. I'm going to sell my shares to the partners. Or not everything, but I'll sell a majority.
Sure.
And then I'm going to go do my next one. And so I did that with the meatball shop. Then I took money from that you know, event, raised some more money and launched Seymour's. Took that from 2015 to 2019. In 2019, last year, I did the exact same thing. Said to my partner, hey, man, really excited about another project. You should take this thing to the moon. I'd like to sell the partners as much of my equity as I can, you know, leaving a percentage in the pool, but, you know, I really want to create another brand. And
sure.
So right now I'm in between Seymour's and my next concept, which is called Creatures of Habit. So it's an interesting place for me. I feel very restless because I'm like, I don't have a restaurant that I'm going to every day right now.
Sure, yeah.
And so it's all about just like staying on staying focused, staying on the beam, not letting this like sort of unique place for me in my, like, you know, I said earlier that I need to be stimulated. I hate sitting still.
Yeah.
And so every day I don't have a place that I'm going to currently. So it's just like, you know, I'm launching a podcast. I've got a bunch of other cool, fun things that I'm working on. Yeah.
So, you know, you said, like, you see, like, a little into the future, like, as far as trends go. So, like, what was that like with, I mean, Meatball Shop and Seymour's? Like, what were you seeing that you went, like, this is the idea I want to push forward with?
You know, like, what people were saying to me when I was working at Frank Restaurant, and I was sort of like a, you know, I was like a, like in the East Village, I was a guy that people would come see. They just knew that I would be at the restaurant, and it became like I was like this sort of like East Village guy.
Yeah.
But like the questions that I would get asked constantly were, what's your favorite pizza spot? What's your favorite sushi spot?
Yeah.
Where's your favorite burger? And it wasn't like, you know, in sort of like the mid-90s to late-90s, people were like, what's your favorite tasting menu? You know, like, that's when, like, tasting menus were, a thing, you know? Or it would be like, what's your favorite restaurant? It became more about, like, your favorite pizza, your favorite sushi, your favorite burger, your favorite ramen. And I started hearing that, and I started hearing that people were much more interested in focused restaurants.
Sure, yeah.
Like, people wanted these, like, focused things. And that was new. And even though it wasn't really like mainstream media at that point, that these were like the way people, this was like kind of the way people were starting to eat. Mm-hmm. I had this inkling that, like, you know, I wanted to do a focused thing.
Yeah. Cause this is before things like BuzzFeed, all these, I feel like, you know, online and obviously Instagram and seeing that people are just taking, you know, pictures of their food constantly.
The only thing that was actually there then was Yelp and TripAdvisor.
Okay.
Yeah. So those two things. But, you know, I wanted to do something simple. I wanted to do something, I wanted to offer something to a demographic of people that I related most to, which was like the late 20s, you know, I'd say 23 to 35. Like, that was like the age group that I was like, I know I can get these people excited about something. And at Frank Restaurant, there was a dish called the Rigatoni Ragu. Rigatoni Ragu, still probably my favorite pasta dish of all time. Simple rigatoni pasta with meatballs and sausage, the best red sauce you've ever had, ever. and people would order that bowl of pasta religiously. People would come in 4, 5, 6 days a week and have it. Even if people were not ordering it as their main dish, they would have one on the table to share.
It's just a true comfort food, right?
Comfort food, just simple, delicious, just hits the spot. And so for me, late night, I would order the rigatoni al ragu, sans the rigatoni, and I would just have the pasta. I would have the meatballs, the sausage, tomato sauce, and a side of broccoli, side of spinach. And so that is the Meatball Shop. So I was eating the Meatball Shop for years before the Meatball Shop even came to fruition. And my business partner at the Meatball Shop, I convinced him to fly to come back from Los Angeles. He was living out in L.A. He was living in San Francisco at the time. I had convinced him to come back to New York to open up a restaurant with me. And he was back, and we couldn't figure out what we were going to do. And then one day I said, dude, what about meatballs? Like, you know how I eat the rigatoni ragu without the rigatoni? Like, people love meatballs.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah, just the simplicity of it. And, like,
and the versatility, right? Like, you can make a meatball out of anything.
True, yeah.
So it was like we had so many options. We could really offer chicken, beef, pork, fish, vegetarian, like whatever we wanted to do in a very, very like easy formula. Deconstructed. Kind of, yeah. Yep. And also any dish you'd ever love, we can make a meatball out of. Yeah. Like any dish. You know, we have probably 65, 70 different meatball recipes at this point.
Wow. And you guys, I mean, you got a book from it too, right?
Yep.
You did a cookbook?
We wrote a cookbook about 6, 7 years ago. And yeah, man.
I had Kristen Tomlin on of Dough. And that's like, I said to her, like, you know, cause she had this aha moment when she was on, I think just, I don't know if it was a bachelorette party or just a girls trip in Philly, and they went into a place and, you know, that was supposed to be for cookies, but they also were selling the cookie dough, and they were just like eating in the car together, and she was like, I should create, you know, like a safe, healthy, you know, like option. So she now has, you know, that you can eat, you know, this cookie dough, and it's extremely popular. They got it.
She's killing it. She's awesome. Such a sweetheart too. I love her.
Yeah, and so I mean, that's kind of that just reminds me, you know, Meatball Shop. You just something that's always been in our life. I mean, you know, cookie dough, like obviously you just or cake batter. You just always think growing up and you know taking a spoon or you know like whatever you know the whisk and licking it and then you know meatballs. I mean, what's your background as far as like I'm Irish, German, Italian. Or...
I'm Italian, Russian, and Hungarian.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I mean you got the Italian in there. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I'm really, you know, the meatball thing for me, you know, I'm fourth generation New York City.
Yeah.
And so when I think of meatballs, you know, obviously the average person just thinks immediately Italy, right? Because it's not, you know, spaghetti meatballs. For me though, being a New York City kid, New York City guy. Meatballs are really a staple of New York, you know, like every single pizzeria, every single deli in your neighborhood had meatballs. They just did, you know, meatball parm, meatball hero. It's just like I grew up eating that. And so, you know, I feel like it's a real New York thing, and I'm a real New York thing.
Yeah, I mean, what's that been like? I mean, so fourth generation New Yorker growing up in the Upper East Side, then you said you were like kind of like known as like what was it, East Village or Lower East Side that you were saying that you're
that
working
whole
in that whole neighborhood. So always like an East Side guy kind
yeah,
of
yeah I mean
kind
I
of
actually
guy.
Funny enough, I've always been an East Side guy. I moved I moved downtown when I was 15.
Okay.
And you know, I think I just for whatever reason I've you know the city has been it's my soul, man. Yeah. You know, and I feel blessed to have been exposed to a city as great as New York from from birth. You know, I feel like it's really sort of the epicenter of almost any innovation that actually makes a splash.
Yeah.
Really, sort of New York is the place where most things are born, in their infancy, and also, you know, as they grow. It's definitely not like the technology hub of the globe.
No, but
things are
cultural
things are really born here.
No, I mean, I grew up in the quintessential suburbs of New Jersey. Mm. If you hit every traffic light green, you're at the GWB in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, the first day I got my license, I looked at my friends and said, okay, who's coming into the city with me? And that's also, you know, like then when I started, you know, traveling abroad or not even abroad, but just like outside of the tri-state area, you know, I mean, I feel like everyone does this for their city, but this is the city.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also go to other cities and I'm like, that's not a city. But like, I mean, it's a pretty unfair measurement. But I mean, even right now, you're living in Brooklyn. We're in Williamsburg. I mean, I think I read like if they were their own separate cities, Brooklyn would still be, I think it, whether it would be the second largest or the third largest in its own right. I mean, it's just... I mean, it's huge.
Well, people will ask me where I'm from. I could be anywhere on the planet. People be like, where are you from? And like, my instinct is, oh, I'm from the city. And you know, like, I assume everybody understands what that means.
Yeah.
In most places, believe it or not, they do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it helps, like, you know, they're here. I know that they have, like, an accent, but you have an American accent at least, so, you know. Yeah. Just hearing that, I think. And people, I mean, what has been your overall, I mean, people seem to be excited when I tell them that I'm like, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I usually say I'm like, oh yeah, I'm right by New York City. Like, I don't even bother saying New Jersey also because most of the time people are like, oh, Jersey Shore. I'm like, no. Like, that's not, you know, that or, you know, I'm binge watching for the first time. I never watched it from start to finish. I'm binge watching Sopranos right now.
Oh, cool.
And I'm just like, I mean, that was a hell of a show.
You know, so I've wanted to do that for so long and I got it. There's two shows that I actually cannot say I've watched from the beginning to the end. Sopranos and The Wire. And those two.
Both excellent. Yeah. Excellent show. HBO, man. They just...
Have bangers. It's just like nonstop.
I think my favorite show of all time, though, is Tremé, another HBO show. And that's,
Tremé?
Yeah. Fantastic show. And you would be... I think you'd be into it because one of the main characters is a chef. It's just a great show. It takes place... There's four seasons. They even... it ended during, like, right when Game of Thrones was starting, because, you know, they're just like, we need to put funds towards this. Yeah. Even Boardwalk Empire ended because they needed to put money towards Game of Thrones, because that was a whole period piece. But HBO, I mean, you know, they just cancel stuff after one season, two seasons. I think they just had so much respect for the show after the third season. They knew they weren't going to give them a whole fourth season, but they said to him, how many episodes will it take for you to complete your story? And so the showrunners were like, we need five episodes. And they gave him five episodes. So it's a short fourth season, but every season is, well, the first season takes place like 3 months after Katrina.
And I gotta check this out.
And then every season is kind of like a year after.
Treme, T-R-I.
Treme, T-R-E-M-E. It's a neighborhood, a very African-American populated neighborhood in New Orleans. Big, big, I mean, like, just, that's where, like, all the musicians live, and just, you know, like, all the old names from, you know, like Louis Armstrong, they grew up there, and cool. It's just, yeah. I mean, New Orleans is my favorite food city, so.
Yeah, New Orleans, I mean, it's hard to not have a great meal in New Orleans if you have any idea what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, yeah, so, I mean, what kind of, so you've always been a New Yorker. What kind of changes have you seen? Just not even in the food scene, but I mean, are you going back up to the Upper East Side? Because that's always been like a neighborhood that people are like, oh, there's nothing up there. But like, I don't know, I've found some good spots up there. That's like, you know.
You know, it's funny. I probably hadn't been up there. And my mother lived in a rent stabilized apartment. Just off of 87th Street and 2nd Avenue for 34 years. And she got remarried about 12 years ago, and they moved to Jersey. They moved to Manalapan, New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
And funny enough, you know, I said I'm fourth generation New York City. Like, my mother's never lived outside of New York City in her life. She's always lived in an apartment. She moved to Manalapan when she was like 60, 62 maybe. And she's never driven a car in her life. So she had no idea what to do. I mean, she was in the middle of nowhere. I mean, Manalapan's kind of like in the middle of nowhere, right? Like, there's not much to do down there if you don't drive.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. You got it. Yeah.
And so she didn't know what to do. She was miserable. They did that for like 4 years. But anyway, I hadn't been up there in years. I probably hadn't been up there, I don't know, at least 10, 12 years.
Wow.
Just because I had no reason to go up there. Outside of, we opened up a meatball shop on 76th Street. So I would go up there for that, but I would literally take the train to 77th and Lex and just walk straight to the restaurant. Or I'd ride my motorcycle up there. But I'd never like walked around the Upper East Side. About a month ago, I had a meeting up there and I said, you know what? I'm going to take a trip down memory lane.
Sure.
So I went up there about 3 hours earlier and I walked down all the streets, and you know, it was so interesting. It was cool. It was a good feeling.
Yeah.
Walking into the parks that I used to play hockey in, and you know, it was cool.
Nostalgic.
But you know, the food up there, when I was a kid growing up, actually, there was some great food up there. There was one of my favorite slices of pizza. Unfortunately, it's not there anymore, but there was a Ray Barry's pizza on the corner of 77th and 3rd Avenue. Probably one of the best slices of pizza I've ever had. It was there for years. It was like a very cheesy, very saucy slice of pizza. I mean, it was delicious. The sauce was like sweet. I could taste it right now. You know, there was, H&H Bagels. I'm not sure if they're still there, but it was on 2nd Avenue between 80th and 81st Street.
Yeah.
Famous, delicious bagel spot.
This is the Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So H&H Bagels, you know, Chirpin' Chicken. You know, they're just like a family-run chicken spot. They were a multi-unit chicken restaurant before, you know, there was multi-unit. So I grew up eating Chirpin' Chicken. There was some good food up there as a kid, I remember. And, of course, the diners, you know, Vion Diner on 86th Street and 2nd Avenue. I mean, it's just like...
Yeah, classic.
You know, tuna melts and shit like that.
Yeah, I mean, as far as... I mean, the food scene, we've definitely, you know, like... I mean, you've even said, like, this, the staples that are out there, and you're saying bagels and you're saying pizza. I mean, that's, do you think that is like New York's food identity, or has it become at this point like there's just, you know, it's a melting pot? Like, what do you see as like New York's food scene, right? Or like New York's food staples right now? Are they still in your mind like pizza, bagels, and like that kind of stuff?
Or? I think when people come to New York to visit,
yeah,
that's what they want.
They want the street meat. They want the
yeah. Like, I think when people come to New York City and they're tourists, like, if they had to list the top five things to eat,
yeah,
the majority of them are going to say, I want to eat New York pizza.
Yeah.
I want a hamburger. I want like the best burger. I want a bagel with lox. And you know, and then I want to go to the best restaurants.
Yeah.
So like I think that I feel like that's sort of that's what New York is. New York is like this place where like I believe it is probably houses the best global food on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue to say that food from every cuisine and region is available in New York, and probably some great chef is doing an interpretation of it.
Yeah.
And it's probably better than outside of the actual region it comes from anywhere else on the planet. And so I think New York is sort of showcases the best of most things. And then of course, you know, what we're known for, which is like pizza, bagels, great burgers, you know, stuff like that.
You got any new favorite spots?
Any new favorite spots? Well, I mean, it's not that new, but there is an incredible Italian restaurant that opened up in this neighborhood called Lilia. It opened up a few years ago. It just kills it. It's so delicious. The food is incredible. You know, with kids, it's not easy to go out and eat. So we have like our go-tos. You know, and I'm also a creature of habit, man. You know, like I say in the restaurant game, most people that go out to eat have a five restaurant cluster, meaning that there are five restaurants that they just consistently go back to.
Yeah.
And it's very, very difficult to penetrate that five restaurant cluster.
It's tough, man.
My job as an entrepreneur in the restaurant industry to become one of the five is my job. My job is to become one of your five. And to do that, it takes an enormous amount of quality and work.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking hard.
I mean, what are you doing to, is that like also like a lot in marketing department? Obviously first, you know, it's creating a quality product. But I mean, there's probably so many places that have amazing food, but you know, people just don't know.
You got
about
it. You got it. So it's certainly marketing.
Yeah.
You know, like your reputation is everything in this game.
Yeah.
And so if I open up a restaurant, I really understand how to get people in the door. That's probably the hardest thing to do, is to get people to come. If I can get them to come once.
Yeah.
The second hardest thing to do, forgetting about opening the restaurant and raising the money and creating the great food, and the second hardest thing to do in the restaurant business is to get them to come back.
Sure.
After their first visit. If they come back after their first visit, you've got one claw in.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they come back after their first visit and somebody knows that they're there for their second time, you have a real opportunity to develop an amazing relationship that could last a lifetime. And so I say to the teams, you know, every single guest that walks through the door in our restaurants is an opportunity to develop an amazing relationship. And if you don't take the opportunity, 24,000 other restaurants in New York will try. So every time somebody walks in the door,
it's a staggering number, yeah.
Yeah. Every time somebody walks in the door, it's our opportunity.
Yeah.
To develop an amazing relationship. And like when I say develop an amazing relationship, I don't mean just like smile and say hi. I mean like actually, like you're on a date with somebody and you're trying to develop an amazing relationship.
You gotta.
You know what I mean? And so like if it's not about treating them like gold, it's about like they should walk out feeling like diamonds. And like, and the only way to get there is if your staff is stoked to be in the position that they're in. They feel supported. They feel loved. They feel like they're part of a winning team. You know, they know is high fives and hugs, like, all day. And if they don't feel that way, even though it's hard work, I mean, restaurant business is tough work, specifically in the kitchen. But, like, if they don't feel that way, there's no shot. You got no chance.
What are you doing to motivate the troops?
I'm in there. I am there. I am there. Eli Manning, you know, yeah. In 2012.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
I'm the guy that's just like I'm in the weeds when I'm in the, and I don't, you know, I'm like, I was a technician in restaurants for so long. I was a busboy and a barback and a bartender and a waiter and a host and a manager. And I did everything for years until I opened up my first place. So when I'm in the restaurant, I am a worker amongst workers. I am not standing in the corner like directing people and you know, walking into an area and being like, what the fuck? I just don't do that.
Yeah.
They know that, like, if I'm there, I'm bussing tables, period.
Wow.
Like, I'm just, that's what I do.
You're in it, yeah.
And I've opened up 16 restaurants in my career. And, you know, I people ask me, like, what do you think it is? And I say, well, I kind of know what it is. It's not about, you know, the P&L. Because if it's about the P&L, nobody's actually going to care.
Mm-hmm.
The guest that walks through the door of your restaurant, and when I say the P&L, I mean the profit and loss statement. I mean the financials of the business, the back end of the business that nobody actually sees outside of the CFO, the CEO, the, you know, the people that are sitting around the table in the office. The guest that walks through the door doesn't think for a blip about your P&L.
Yeah.
About how much money you're making or how much money you're spending on this staff person, or they don't, that doesn't ever cross their mind. So if you're making decisions, large scale decisions to run your business based on what a piece of paper says, you're totaled, you're finished. You've got to pay close attention to it, but you cannot make decisions based on it. Large scale decisions based on it. I would rather go down, you know, with a staff of people that fucking love their job, with guests that love the environment, that love the food, then go down a slow, miserable death of, like, running on bare bones, just making ends meet, getting through the winter and just scaving through. Yeah. Like, I just, you know, that's the way I see it. The staff, the team has got to be stoked and fired up. You know, it's like trying to – it's like the Pittsburgh Steelers, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, that team is just – they were miserable. And it was all over the news.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, nobody was happy. Nobody was happy at all, you know? And it was just like they weren't winning any games.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It was just like – it was just toxic, debaucherous misery.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to be a part of that shit.
I mean, you, like you said, you've opened up what, 16 places now. At what point do you go, I guess, from a business perspective, like, I guess with the P&L, like, let's expand. Like, what at what moment do you go, do you ever feel safety, or is it always, I mean, a risk? I mean, obviously it is, but, like, what point from a business perspective do you
know,
go?
So for me, you know, the interesting piece, and I think that this is what makes me an entrepreneur, is that I don't walk around with fear of not making it. Yeah. It just doesn't – that doesn't – for me, that doesn't – that's not like an emotion that I'm in tune with, you know? And I think I'm a very emotional dude,
mm-hmm.
But, like, the fear component – I'm just not – it doesn't affect me in that way. Like, I'm ready, willing, and able to constantly take risks because I believe in my soul, in my heart, that I am going to be able to win through kindness, positivity, optimism, and experience. Yeah. And, like, I know that – you know, like, even with my four-year-old kid, like, my wife – you know, she'll kill me if she hears this, but, like, she's like – she, you know – we're very different the way we think about the parenting thing. Like, with my son, if he has a temper tantrum, I, like, take him aside and I'm like, bud, you don't have to do this.
Yeah.
Like, you can do this and you're doing it, but you don't have to do this. Like, we can talk about this. Let's talk about it. Let's think about what you're doing so that it's, you know, when it happens again, because it will, like, we can always say, hey, remember that conversation we had?
Sure.
You know, like, I get through life that way. If there's some shit going down in the business that I'm not stoked about, like, I literally stop everything and like have a conversation. And I'm like, remember why we're here.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Like, you're having a temper tantrum right now. Just know that your life is great, dude. Like, you can fucking flip out and you're going to do it again. And I'm going to take you aside and I'm not going to scream and yell and make you feel uncomfortable and scared and weird. I'm going to be like, dude, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And I treat business the same way. You know, it's like when the shit's going down, like, I'm lucky that I didn't own a restaurant, you know, during 9/11, right? Like, that must have been – I can only imagine. I worked in restaurants at 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I did own restaurants through Sandy, which was an interesting experience.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I can only see through catastrophe, like, massive, like, catastrophe. Do I see myself failing in the restaurant business? I'm going to not win all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Well, like, you had this one quote, fail often, fail fast, learn from your mistakes.
That's it.
I like just even the, I think the biggest, you know, fail often one thing, but fail fast, like, that really, that stuck with me. It's just like, what does that exactly, like, mean to you? Does that mean, like, if you see yourself failing, like, get through it? Or
for me, it's like, you know, it's sort of like, don't be afraid to make decisions.
Okay.
Right? And so, like, as like, again, like, as a leader, as an entrepreneur, for me, you know, I've got to make decisions.
Yeah.
I've just got to make decisions. It's good. Like, and they have to happen fast. And so if you constantly overanalyze and dig and do all the analytics before you make a decision, sometimes that, and I'm not saying that there's anything necessarily wrong with that style, but like sometimes that just slows you down way too much. And the others that are fighting against you are just going to blow right by you.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying pay attention to the competition too much, but I'm saying, like, if you believe in something, fucking do it. And if it doesn't work, great. Now you've learned.
Now yeah.
You know, like, life is long, man. People say life is short. Like, I don't agree. Like, life is fucking long,
yeah.
Right? And at the end of the day, we're all going to meet our maker.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe that it's not about, like, you know, doing the best you can do for someone. It's about fucking, you're here.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you're here. Go for it. Do it. Make a decision. And if you fail, fucking speed it up. Get there fast. If
yeah.
you know it's going to go, well, then great. Don't be afraid. Don't hold on to the very last second. Be like, oh, you know what? This isn't working. Pull the plug. Done.
Move
Learn.
On to, yeah, move on to the next thing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of egos out there. What you're saying before, just as far as them people, like you saying to them, even from to your son, to staff or whatever, just, you know, like, all right, let's, like, think about it right now. I mean, I worked in reality TV for a while, and just dealing with people that were, you know, nobodies in the sense of the entertainment industry, host or, you know, talent. I did air quotes right then for talent. And I worked on a lot of pilots. I mean, that's just how it works in reality TV. They'll even shoot a whole season, but at the same time, a production company is shooting five other shows. And if one of them lands, it pays for those tenfold.
Sure.
Because it's not expensive to make a reality show.
Yep.
But I mean, I worked on some shows where just people right away just felt so entitled and just got this ego. And I mean, I did burn a few bridges sometimes because I was just like one time I just remember not yelling, but just being like, you get to be on TV. Like, in the grand concept of things, I'm like, TV has only been in, you know, our world for like 50, 60 years, and you get to be on it. That's cool. That's a
Enjoy.
Cool thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, in the film industry, like, lunches, because it's just a lot easier to get everyone lunch and have it to show up at a certain time versus people bringing their lunch or going out to eat. You know, there's a meal provided for you, but then people have a problem with the meal. It's like, well, you know what? If you also know that you're going to be like that, then bring your own meal.
Sure.
And there was just, but it's like, oh, but I want sushi today. Okay, then we'll go, you know, if you felt like sushi, but like, you know, just the, but then also expecting someone else to do that for you,
mm-hmm.
just the entitlement and then just the egos that come from it.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of type A personalities. And
tell me about it. I know all about it.
Yeah.
I did two reality shows, and not easy, man. Not easy.
As I hinted at earlier, I mean, I knew about the meatball shop. I mean, I've been there several times. And I know about Seymour's. I haven't been yet, but I learned about your name just because, I mean, you know how social media works now. Like, I'm just always sure looking at food and film stuff, and it was the perfect video. It was the GQ's The Breakdown series, and I really enjoyed that, man. It seemed like you were having fun with that. What
I
was
had a
that?
blast. It was so much fun. It's like
Breaking down some classic food films and just like some food scenes and bringing your expertise into it. I mean, just the I, it, I you made me laugh really hard when you're just like, yeah, probably none of you know how to boil an egg
it's the truth.
or soft boil and all
Yeah, I mean,
that.
people are like, "Oh, egg," and I'm like, "No, it's actually not very easy. It's
Yeah.
actually really hard." You
Yeah.
know, like I
Yeah.
and yeah, I mean, it was fun. I was stoked that they asked me to do it, and got a lot of views on YouTube. I couldn't believe how many views it got.
Yeah,
It's
no,
like
it's
1.6 million views or something right
wow, that
now.
many, that's crazy. That's yeah, no, that's I mean, and that's got to be great publicity too, I feel like, right? You
Sure,
know, like
absolutely.
that's
Yeah.
no.
Anything I do with those guys, GQ, Esquire, like those publications are they're it's like perfect. It's
Yeah.
like a I'm super humbled and grateful that they would look to me to
Yeah.
be on those platforms and
Yeah, they approached you. They
Yeah.
like, yeah. What
Yeah.
was, do you know like what the like draw was? Like, was it what I mean in the sense
You know, I've
of?
done a bunch of stuff with GQ over the
Okay.
years, and I think that they sort of just look at me as like I'm on the younger side of the restaurateur,
Yeah.
thing. So they kind of look at me as a sort of like youngish restaurateur style dude,
Yeah.
chefy kind of guy.
You ran the marathon.
Ran the marathon.
What was that like? Was that your first marathon?
No, I ran the marathon in 2008, actually in the Hamptons. The Hamptons has a marathon,
Okay.
and it's an easier course than New York. So I was running with this run club in the city called Bridge Runners, and they were like, "Hey, we're gonna all run the Hamptons marathon because we can all get bibs as a team." We could not get into the New York City Marathon. It's kind of funny, right? Like New York City Marathon, very difficult to get a bib in the New York City Marathon if you're actually from New York.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't
It,
know.
they want,
I mean, there's a lot of politics to it,
well,
or?
they just want people to, they want people from all over the world. So like
Okay.
they give opportunity to people from other places before they actually give New
Yeah.
York City people. However, if you run with a charity, which is what I did in 2017, no, excuse me, 2018,
With City Harvest?
City Harvest.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so, I
same.
mean, I recently had Dan Churchill on, so,
Oh, cool.
yeah.
Dan's a good buddy.
Yeah.
I've been working with City Harvest for a while, and in 2018 they asked me if I would be the team captain of the marathon
Oh,
team,
wow.
and I said, "Hell yeah, that's awesome." And
Yeah.
so, running the New York City Marathon is probably, I would say, top 5 days in my life.
Wow, yeah. What was your time?
3:30. No, 3:4. My first marathon was 3:36. This is 3:42.
Okay.
Yeah. It was just like a unbelievable experience. I mean, coming over the 59th Street Bridge into Manhattan from Long Island City, just like unreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember what you had to eat afterwards?
I went to Little Frankie's in the East Village and yeah, pizza and pasta and
Just carb
we
up.
just went hard. It was awesome.
Yeah, that must have been a
Yeah.
pretty just like,
Celebratory meal.
yeah, exactly. Just like what a moment, and then you're just like, let me just have it all.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, just give me one of everything.
Yeah. Well, obviously you have knowledge in film from that, from the breakdown, but I asked you some of your favorite movies. You gave me some good options. I kind of want to talk a scene by from Stand By Me and a scene from Scarface. I feel like those were two. I mean, you gave me some great options because as I told you before we started recording, there's episodes that we do food-centric movies, but I like doing these scenes from like non, like food movies, because I think there's just, I mean, it's food, it's everywhere, and we just see it in our pop culture and in our cinema and our films.
Are you going to bring up the pie eating contest and Stand By Me?
Yes.
Ha ha.
So since he's the Barfo-rama scene, yeah. I think they call it. I mean, that's just, well, God. Let's play that scene right now, and then we'll talk about it.
Lourdes! Slowly, a sound started to build in Lourdes' stomach. A strange and scary sound, like a log truck coming at you at 100 miles an hour. Suddenly, Lourdes opened his mouth. And before Bill Travis knew it, he was covered with 5 pies worth of used blueberries. The women in the audience screamed. Boss man Bob Cormier took one look at Bill Travis and barfed on Principal Wiggins. Principal Wiggins barfed on the lumberjack that was sitting next to him. Mayor Grundy barfed on his wife's tits. But when the smell hit the crowd, that's when Lardass' plan really started to work. Girlfriends barfed on boyfriends. Kids barfed on their parents. A fat lady barfed in her purse. The Donnelly twins barfed on each other. And the women's auxiliary barfed all over the benevolent order of antelopes. And Lardass just sat back and enjoyed what he'd created. A complete and total barforama.
So I mean, obviously, I mean, you had a good laugh at that right then when you were guessing what scene I was gonna bring up from Stand By Me. I mean, what is that scene? What does this film mean to you?
You know, I mean, that film. You know, it's interesting when people ask you your favorite movies.
Yeah.
That movie always is the first thing that pops into my mind.
Wow,
and I think. Yeah. You know, it's just a classic. It was, you know, it came out in probably like the late 80s, early 90s, maybe 91, do you know?
I think late 80s because I'm trying to think. I mean, River Phoenix at that point, I think that's like...
It was Corey Feldman. Corey Feldman was super young.
Actually, I think more like mid 80s because yeah. I'm just trying to think like, you know, he was in Goonies and Goonies was around. Yeah. Like, yeah, so...
Yeah, so that movie... It spoke to me at a young age.
I mean, it's just one of the best coming of age stories.
Pretty much, and I just thought all the characters were so cool in the movie, and you know, funny enough, like me and a couple of friends when we were probably like 13 years old, actually went out to the Palisades and like spent 3 days on the tracks and like camped out and like
really?
Were out on the train tracks.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that must have been an experience.
Yeah. But you know that movie, I just think the story is just so good, and you know, the being that it's a Stephen King, it doesn't feel like a Stephen King
no,
film.
No, no, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, just like just everything about it just is it's just fantastic movie, you know. And then the Barfarama scene, actually what I really remember most about it was him prepping.
Yeah.
For the Barfarama scene with the eggs that he kept on eating. how many eggs did he put in there? He must have put like 5 or 6
yeah,
eggs
exactly.
in there.
Yeah,
exactly. And then he drank castor oil, I think. eggs and castor oil before he went into the pie eating contest. But, you know, it's so classic.
Yeah.
For my age, I'm 39 years old, you know. It's just like one of those movies that you grow up in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, I looked it up. It came out in 86.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. Yeah, no, it's just one of those. I mean, it just automatically, I just love it that, like, they're telling it around the campfire. It's just totally. Like one of those, like, you know, classic, just like campfire kind of stories.
Yep.
Just the way he's sharing
his
it.
His goofy dog, you yeah. know, like that. they were arguing over whether or not Goofy or Pluto was a dog.
Yeah, but yeah, and just I mean, you know, just the Barforama, like the story scene itself. I mean, just as far as like self indulgence, but then also, I mean, you know, like I mean, you could even I could try to go deeper and say like I mean, there's a message as far as body shaming, but that I feel like that's probably for more. Right now, 2020 conversation, interpretation versus like right then of
yeah.
just like a silly story that boys are telling around the campfire.
Yeah, but. I think it was basically him, you know, it's just like the big fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was pretty much what it was.
Which are great sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. He was just like, you know what, I've gotten bullied pretty much my whole life. I'm going to give him the big middle finger and just do it.
And well, and also, I mean, again, you gave me a lot of great options. I was looking, I was like, Braveheart, Gladiator. I mean, like, I was trying to look for food scenes there. I mean, Scarface. I was, you know, because sometimes it's just obviously such a different film from Stand By Me. So sure. I love the juxtaposition of those two films. I mean, this is, talk about a guy. I mean, you were saying you did every kind of job in this movie. You know, like, we see him being, I mean, there's even at one point he's just like, I'm no bus boy. You know, I'm not going to try to do a Scarface impression right now. But just even when he's married to Michelle Pfeiffer, there's that one scene where he's really drunk at the restaurant. I don't know if you remember that one particular.
And they're fighting in the restaurant?
Yeah, they're fighting, and he's just like, well, I'll play that scene right now, and we'll talk about it.
What are you fool? What's wrong with that?
I'm not hungry.
You're not hungry?
You even know about the trial?
What did you order it for?
I lost my appetite.
You even know that Sheffield said he can get you a postponement? Eh?
This here? That's what it's all about, Manny. Eating, drinking, fucking, sucking.
Come on.
Snoring. Then what? Tell me. Then what? You're 50. You got a bag for a belly. You got tits. You need a bra. They got hair on them. You got a liver. They got spots on it, and you're eating this fucking shit. You're looking like these rich fucking mummies in there.
I love that fucking movie. Oh my God. I haven't seen it in so long. Such
right?
A good movie.
It's such a good movie.
Such a good movie.
I remember the first time watching it, I was watching it with, like, I don't know, my mom and my sister were out somewhere, and I watched it. Well, I picked it up from Blockbuster and watch it with my dad. And I don't know if he had seen it before. My dad's not like a big movie guy. I just watching and being like, oh, this is an interesting movie to watch it with my dad right now. But I mean, very different scene from Stand By Me. I mean, you've got a drunk Tony Montana and just, you know, the whole eating, drinking, fucking, sucking. What is it with this movie? What is it with this scene? Like, this is just like,
I think it's the exact opposite of they're deeply indulging in the powder.
Oh,
and
yes.
They've got all this food on the table and they're not really eating.
Then what?
Yeah. I mean, that movie is just I don't even know. The truth is, in terms of, like, I don't know if there's any other movie that can touch that movie in terms of 1970s, 80s drug gangs.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I feel like it is just, you know, there's been so many movies that have tried to do something like Scarface, and I mean, Al Pacino is just he's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he was just nominated for, why am I blanking on the
was
movie?
Was he just nominated for,
The Irishman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't watch the Golden Globes last night.
My man Brad Pitt won for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Did he? Best actor?
Supporting.
Uh-huh.
Best supporting. He's just, man. I was just on the way here, I was listening to Marc Maron's podcast, and him and Leonardo DiCaprio are on.
Yeah.
And they're just like, that's my favorite film of the year, Once Upon a Time.
It was really well done.
It's so good.
And so funky.
And Brad Pitt is just so good in it. He's just truly become one of the best character actors of, like, his generation, just all generations.
Yeah.
He's just awesome. But but Pacino in this, and I know that's definitely an idol of his. Like, I've, you know, heard him, you know, quoting him, that just, like, I mean, I think everyone, anyone that's come after Pacino, like, you look at Pacino, you look at De Niro, and this is just such a clear movie, and the scene in particular of just, like, overindulgence, and just, you know.
Who won best power. Actor?
Oh, Joaquin Phoenix won for The Joker.
Oh, yeah.
Which, Joker, polarizing movie, love it, hate it, but it's still one of those movies that, like, you can't question what he put into it.
Oh, my God.
You know. I enjoyed the movie. I think I went in with a. I think other people went in expecting closer to like a comic book movie.
It's not
and
at
it's
all.
It's not. I mean, you
it
know.
It is a dark.
It's a dark movie. And talk about, I mean, Scorsese and De Niro, and De Niro's even in that, but it's, you know, this version of the Joker doesn't exist without Taxi Driver and.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. All, and all those Scorsese movies.
That are just very
King of Comedy. That's what I'm, that's that. That was, yeah, you know.
I mean, I just I look at that. I mean, I feel like he was the influence of Raging Bull in the Joker is crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I actually just watched Raging Bull last weekend. I hadn't seen that movie in forever.
That's so good.
Oh, I mean, so just good. Like some of those monologues that like De Niro does in Raging Bull, and then to see Joaquin Phoenix, you know, in his role as the Joker, I was just like, oh, that's where it's from.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, I mean, and he did, obviously, I mean, it's the Joker, and he made it his own. I mean, just in the fact that Heath Ledger, the last person, or no, Jared Leto was the last person to portray the Joker, but Heath Ledger winning Best Supporting Actor at the Oscars.
Yep.
You know, after he passed, was a posthumous win. But, he won for Joker. That was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, won for best comedy. that's the whole thing with the Golden Globes. The Hollywood Foreign Press like breaks. I mean, the one year I think Matt Damon's The Martian won best comedy, and that's not.
No, that's weird.
I mean, I laughed a lot in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
It's not a comedy,
but it's not.
There
yeah.
are some funny moments in it, but it's certainly. I wouldn't categorize that as comedy. I would categorize that as like drama.
Yeah. Like, yeah, and not even like, you know, a mashup of dramedy, but I mean, yeah, it's just, it's got plenty of dark moments, yeah. It's
drama, thriller, yeah. Like, you know, you never know what's going to actually happen in a bad way when he's out there. You know?
Well, last but not least, have my lovely little speed round of questions called Gut Instincts. It's just whatever comes to your mind first. Favorite fast food?
Pizza.
Go to alcoholic beverage. Are we having drinks?
Don't drink
anymore. Yeah. So what's your go to? What are you having with dinner? What are you having?
You know, I mean, my go to beverage is coffee.
Yeah. Okay.
But you know, with dinner, I'm a simple guy, man. Like sparkling water.
There you go. Favorite childhood snack.
Kraft mac and cheese.
Sweet or savory?
So tough. Both.
Yeah,
I like them both.
Are we gonna expand as into the world of sweets as far as a business, or are you interested in that at all?
You know, my wife is an incredible baker. She actually did all the cookies and the ice cream recipes for the meatball shop.
Okay.
And so for the next project, Creatures of Habit, she will definitely be taking a stab at some sweet treats.
Yeah.
I think I probably, you know, sweets are an occasional thing for people. Not everyone, for sure, but savory is an everyday thing. So I think for me, in the world of business, savory is definitely the direction. And in the world of my life, though, I'm like literally 50-50 split. I love sweets as much as I love savory, as much as I love sweets.
Yeah, I'm finding more and more, man, that like I gotta have something sweet after I have something savory.
I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you.
It's tough.
I know.
I'm trying
really
to find
hard.
Like a healthy option, like just keeping like a bar of like dark chocolate in my freezer, but then the whole thing is like, how do I not finish this bar?
Totally. And then once you break in, you're in.
Yeah.
It's tough.
It is tough.
Sugar's no joke.
Favorite food city, domestic and international? You can't say New York because that's just, you know.
Yeah. Favorite food city. You know, I'm a huge, huge sushi fan. I absolutely love sushi. It's probably my favorite thing to eat.
Wow.
And so Los Angeles has some of the best sushi on the planet.
Okay.
Love LA for sushi. I love LA for Southeast Asian food. I feel like the Thai scene, the Vietnamese food scene there is amazing. Also the Korean food scene in Los Angeles is incredible.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, I really like LA for their sushi and their Asian cuisine. I think that they've got it down. I mean, the Bay Area certainly does have some really incredible Southeast Asian cuisine as well, but I feel like LA's kind of got it down there for Thai food and Vietnamese food and Japanese food and Korean food, and I love that food.
Yeah.
So LA is probably my favorite food city in the country outside of New York.
Yeah.
And then I'd say outside of the country, Barcelona.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. I was just there. It was for the second time over this summer, and that's just...
I just think it's hard to beat the food there. I think it's probably my favorite food city in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I love the food there. What are we eating there? Just like...
So there's a couple of restaurants there that I feel like the food is just so insane and consistently. I've been there like 3 or 4 times. There's a restaurant called Cal Pep. They do this sort of baby squid and garbanzo bean dish with black squid ink. I don't know if there's anything better than it. There's another guy in the actual Ramblas in the Boqueria there.
Yeah, that market is amazing.
Yeah, the market's amazing.
Yeah.
And there's a stand there called Pinocchio, and the guy who's running that stand has been doing, you know, there for 50, 60 years. He does these grilled shrimp, these head-on grilled gambas. I mean, it's hard to bite into something that tastes better than that. He also does this baby squid and garbanzo bean dish that's just absolutely phenomenal. I just think, you know, like all the tapas and, you know, the cheese and the meat and just like everything about the whole entire Catalan style of eating is just, it's just so good.
Yeah.
And it's just so rich and delicious and, you know, the produce there is incredible, and yeah, I mean, you know, it's very, very good. Iberico, ham, and so it's all good.
Yeah, just that whole tapas culture, and then I went to San Sebastian in the, you know, north after that, and there,
incredible.
You know, pinchos and just that whole realm, yeah. And that's just that just amazed me when I was there, because it's just, you know, a counter of these small plates. And you just go up and, you know, some are just on individual plates, some are on bigger plates, and you ask for, you know, like another plate to put everything on. And then you go up after, and it's just honor system, and you go up afterwards. Because
Also
you step outside and you're eating outside, which is just like a cool atmosphere, everyone eating around. But then I went inside, I'm like, you know, uno cerveza, you know, and like just say, and like before I could finish, they're like, yeah, that, and then I'm like, oh, wow. Like,
yeah, they know it all.
You're
yeah.
on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, also like as simple as the pan con tomate that they do in Spain, you know, it's just delicious, fresh, warm bread with like roasted tomatoes scraped over the top of the bread with garlic and olive oil. And you're just like, I mean, so good.
I was given a paella pan for Christmas, so I got it. I'm like, all right, well, now I got to try to make paella.
What's better than paella? Yeah.
Favorite cuisine? Sushi?
I would have to say if I had to choose one, I would eat sushi from now till death.
Guilty pleasure food?
I'm a huge, like, well... I would say sweet or savory. Like for me, savory, when I think of a savory meal that I love more than anything on the planet, it is probably the burger with Roquefort cheese at the Spotted Pig with the garlic shoestring fries.
I was there right around Thanksgiving with a buddy, and we, yeah.
That burger is truly spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, the patty is probably 10 ounces. They put...
It's got that LaFrieda beef. Shout out to Pat LaFrieda.
Yeah, it's got that LaFrieda beef. It's got that blue cheese that's rich, and the bun is just this, like, beautiful, perfectly toasted, buttery bun. And then, you know, the shoestring fries that they fry with shaved garlic and finish with parsley. Like that's my like when I close my eyes and think about a savory meal that is just indulgent and delicious and awesome, I think of that. And then I'm like an ice cream fan. Huge fan of ice cream.
Yeah.
Huge, huge, huge fan of ice cream. And on a regular basis, I eat the lighter stuff. You know, like I'll go to like 16 handles or I'll have like a Halo Top pint.
Sure.
But like if I'm swinging for it, you know, I'll go to Morgan Stern's and go.
What's your favorite kind of ice cream?
I'm a peanut butter dude. Like, I love peanut butter. Yeah. So, like, anything really chocolate peanut buttery.
Yeah.
With chunks of some sort.
That's the spot.
Reese's. Yeah. Oh. Give me. Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah. It's bad I haven't eaten anything yet today.
Yeah.
favorite condiment?
Favorite condiment? Well, I'm going to give a shout-out to a new sauce that was recently sent to me that I feel like... Classically, you know, I do love ketchup.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's a new sauce called truff. Have you heard of it?
Truff?
T-R-U-F-F.
No. Oh, truff. Okay.
Do you like spicy?
I do.
So I'm going to give you something to take home.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
These guys, I have no idea who they are. They actually sent me a bunch of stuff, but it's a hot sauce infused with truffle oil.
Ooh.
And it's bananas. It is so fucking good.
Yeah.
And they make like a mildly spicy and a heavy spicy.
Uh-huh.
And I just...
And what have you put it on?
Everything.
Everything. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I was going to ask like, if there's something in particular.
I typically have it like for you know, breakfast pretty much every day.
Okay.
I have eggs.
Okay.
And so I put it on my eggs.
Nice.
But like it works on... It is so good. It is so good. It is so good.
I'm excited.
Yeah, so that's my new one. I mean, you know, I love sriracha, but I got kind of bored with sriracha.
Yeah.
So I gotta say, like, classically, if I'm calling out a condiment, ketchup. I mean, I grew up with eating ketchup with everything. I mean,
same here.
You know, in the 80s, 90s, you grow up and you just it's just like ketchup.
Yeah. Like tater tots, chicken nuggets.
Yes, whatever.
Exactly.
Pasta. You know, like ramen.
Makes me think of. Goodfellas at the end when he's just
totally.
Like say you know the instead of red sauce.
That's one of the best scenes in Goodfellas when they're all in jail and they've got
we've covered that scene. That's a great slicing scene. The garlic.
Yeah.
That's just like I mean it's such a fan. It's my top five favorite films.
Oh yeah.
I have the painting that Joe Pesci's mom, which is Scorsese's mom in real life, is painting in the movie. You know, the guy in the middle, one dog looking one way, one dog looking the other way.
Yeah.
Got the guy there in the middle saying, what do you want from me? I was given like a $50 gift certificate to eBay once, and this was like a while ago. And I still don't do like a lot of online shopping or never really use eBay. And then just I think I was watching Goodfellas one time, and I still had this $50 gift card. And I'm just like, I wonder if that painting... is on there. And I found like in China the painting was, you know, someone was, you know, making it for $25 and shipping was $25. I'm like,
perfect.
Sold.
There you go.
What's the last thing you ate?
Today?
Well, I mean, you're having a protein shake right now or I mean
yeah,
but,
so the last thing I ate was my eggs this morning.
Yeah,
I ate about 2 cups of spinach. 2 whole eggs, 4 egg whites, truff hot sauce, and that was my breakfast.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What would be your last meal?
Oh, man. That's so hard. I mean, so, I have incredibly fond memories as a kid eating a big, huge bowl of Kraft mac and cheese. Like, lots of, you know, like when you put your spoon through it, you can hear it go.
That lovely sound that I'm sure everyone loved hearing. Right
yeah. Like that sound where it's just, you know, it's just like there's milk and there's the whole thing in there. I mean, it's got one of those flavor profiles that's addictive and memorable.
Yeah.
I don't think that it would be alone, but I would certainly have a bowl of Kraft mac and cheese. I'd probably have a bowl of the rigatoni al ragu from Frank.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have... definitely a lineup of sushi of some sort from Sushi Nozawa. Like, I would have Nozawa actually prepare his tasting menu in one go. And then I would probably finish off with just a heaping bowl of peanut butter chocolate ice cream.
Yeah.
And, like, a little bit of vanilla.
I mean, if it's your last meal, are you having any booze? I mean, are you missing it at all? Like, is there any
You know, the truth is, I would say that I miss smoking pot.
Okay.
More than I miss drinking booze, just because you know, like having a beer watching a football game is awesome. But like there's not many people that have a beer watching a football game, right? Like you have like three or four or five, and then you kind of feel like shit the next day.
Yeah, more and more beers give me the worst hangover now. Like for some reason, like wine and hard liquor. I'm sure obviously I had a lot of it, but like beer,
I mean, I also miss like in Italy with my wife, you know, like it was a bummer that like I couldn't have a glass of rosé, you know, in the summertime. But like the truth is that like I don't really miss it. Like I have like a pretty, you know, outgoing personality. I can kind of get into any, like walk into any room and feel comfortable and stoked and have a blast.
Yeah.
But like watching a comedy after smoking a bowl, hard to beat that. Like you don't wake up with a hangover ever. At least I don't remember waking up with a hangover. And just like, you know, like being like in the country, like, you know, smoke a little pot. So like that's the only thing I really miss, but I don't miss it. You know, like life is way too good for me. Without it, and it was not good at all with it. Not that it wasn't good at all, but like the bad far outweighed the good when I was partaking. And so, you know, I feel like I don't need it.
Gotcha. Do you prefer to dine in or dine out?
Oh, I'm a dine out guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you cooking at home at all, or
I cook a lot.
You do? Okay.
We
go
out
breakfast and stuff.
Yeah,
like
we
that,
go but out once a week, but I typically cook my breakfast every day. I typically cook lunch most nights, and on the weekends I cook almost all the meals because we have a house upstate that we go to, so I cook. I love cooking. Yeah. I love cooking specifically like in the spring, summer, and fall. I've got a green egg, you know, at the house upstate. I plan my weekends around it pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting my kids into cooking, so it's fun.
What would be your spirit food, or what embodies you in the out there in the, you know, in the food realm?
What embodies me out there in the food realm? Wow. Probably like a perfectly cooked New York strip steak.
Yeah, fourth generation New Yorker.
You know, it's like a New York thing. It's lean. It's not too fatty. It's, you don't want it all the time, but you definitely want it like you want it. you know, it's like, you know, like the ribeye is like the, you know, like you want a steak, most people go with a ribeye.
Yeah.
I mean, I love a ribeye.
Sure.
But like, there are moments where I'm like, I want that super tender, I want that New York strip.
It's good. Might be my favorite cut.
The strip?
Yeah.
I go back and forth, you know, I feel like there's no, I don't, you know, obviously the filet mignon is the filet mignon, but like, I feel like it's rare to get like the flavor and the tenderness like you can get with a strip steak. And so, yeah, I love the strip. And I feel like it's just like a, you know, it's like, it's not like a piece of meat. It's like a piece of meat, you know?
You're going to the movies. Are we having any snacks?
Yes. Yes. We're having M&M's typically.
Nice.
Peanut and popcorn.
And last question. What's a great lesson you've learned in food? I mean, you've had so many experiences from, you know, being a chef and in school and working many different positions and now, you know, an entrepreneur. I mean, I have to have learned thousands, but yeah, what's like, you know, one that's really stuck out to you?
don't try to core a overripe pear.
I'm loving the simplicity, the straightforwardness of this right now.
Don't try to core out an overripe pear without putting your thumb about an inch above the tip of the paring knife, because an overripe pear tends to be very, very soft.
Yeah.
And if you don't have your thumb there to block the blade from going in too fast,
sounds
and
like
too deep.
This is a story from experience.
Yeah, I put a paring knife right through my hand. And that was a big glaring lesson learned. And so that's like literal lesson learned through food. Figurative lesson learned through food. You know, there's only one way to really get people excited consistently globally, and that is to put delicious food in front of them. That has been proven over and over and over and over again for thousands of years, that when you put delicious food in front of someone, no matter where you are on the planet, that person will be happy. And so I am in the business, luckily, of making people extraordinarily happy through food.
That's awesome.
And you know, I think that that is the one lesson that I've learned over and over again, that the easiest way to fix problems is to just drop something delicious in front of someone, and you know.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
My job.
I can't thank you enough for coming on. I had a lot of questions. I think I got to about half of them, but we are at like an hour and a half right now. I know you're a busy guy, so hopefully I'll have you on again sometime. That would be awesome.
Totally.
Keep chatting. Please right now tell everyone where they can find you social media-wise, obviously what restaurants to visit, all that good stuff.
You can find me anywhere at Michael Chernow, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, TikTok, very little on TikTok, but I'm working on it. My restaurant's the Meatball Shop, Seymour's. Soon will be Creatures of Habit.
Well, yeah, so what's that going to be?
Creatures of Habit is actually going to be a counter service fast casual in the health and wellness space, but I'm basically trying to do something different than what's available right now. I'm going to be focusing on the different categories like keto, paleo, plant-based, but really ultimately what I'm trying to do is make wellness fun for everyone. So I'm trying to do the Vans of wellness.
Yeah.
Just like, it's not female focused. It's not bodybuilding male focused. It is right down the center of the lane. It's great music, really cool vibes, just fun times. We do the heavy lifting for you if you want to try a specific way of eating. If you want to just change, you want to change, you know, your 80-20 from 80% unhealthy, 20% healthy to 80% healthy, 20% unhealthy, we'll be able to help you out there. We're going to have great, delicious food in those categories. We're also going to have a section on the menu called the Fuckets, and the Fuckets are going to be all the food that we just talked about a little while ago.
Awesome. Yeah. And you said you're working on a podcast?
Working on a podcast called Born or Made. I'm actually launching it this week.
Oh, I can't wait to listen.
Yeah, I've got some good guests on it. Born or Made is essentially, I sit down with people that have inspired me over the years, and you know, I ask them the question. We talk about a lot of shit, but you know, the one question that I really sort of start with, and then we get to the answer at the end, is, do you think you were born with the inherent ability to crush it the way you have?
Gotcha.
Or do you think you were made over time?
I like
it. So basically
it.
Nature, nurture.
Yeah.
Know? And then at the end, I get the answer from them.
Perfect. Oh, yeah. Man, I can't wait to listen.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I'm assuming Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
Apple Podcasts, yeah. Spotify, and YouTube, because I film them all.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. That's something that I kind of feel like I maybe should start doing. But at the same time, I like just it, you know, being...
This is so easy. This is awesome, man. The ability to be able to roll up and just set up like this is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. We have a little catchphrase to end every episode. It's, there's more to cut, something my grandmother always says. Actually, I think this is the first episode I'm recording after Christmas where she gave me a gift, but I'm like, Nana, you know what would really make me happy? If you would say, like, it was a line she always said just at dinner, like, oh, don't worry, there's more to cut, you know, like if the platter is getting sparse. And I was like, can you say that on camera? And she's really shy, and she's like, oh, I don't know. And I'm just like, it made me really happy. So check that out on Instagram, because I posted that. But anyway, if you don't mind reminding foodies out there that there's more to cut.
There's more to cut, guys.
Beautiful. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, dude.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy, and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you such a sweet thing, good enough to...